Good morning and welcome to Tech Days Online. We've stolen the Channel 9 film crew, flown them to London, stuck them in a room, given them coffee and cakes, and we're able to go live now and spend a day with them talking to you about data into intelligence. Let's actually work out how we're going to do that. We have got a galaxy of speakers, as you can see here. I've already got Matthew sitting on the couch from Microsoft Research. And you'll notice for the rest of the day the word MVP appearing quite a lot in this. So I thought it might be quite good to understand what they are so you can get more sense of how we're going to get value out of today. So what is an MVP? It's a Microsoft value professional. We took the idea from most value player in NFL. And these guys are, first of all, they're industry experts. They're out there every day implementing products and projects and so on our stack. But more than that, they're able to share their expertise. So in the evenings, they go down the pub or to a coffee shop or to a meeting room, and they talk about what they've been doing. They blog, they're online, they're on videos. So I've rounded up a load of the very best of those guys to talk to you about what they've been doing to try and turn data into intelligence, which is the new sort of secret sauce that we have in IT. Each one of our talks is going to be 45 minutes, and then we've got a 15-minute break while we get the next guy in, make sure the demos are working, get the stuff on, and you can go and get coffee and sugar-related snacks so that you can maintain your interest through the day. We've also got a chat room, and we've got the infinite monkey cage here. You can see some of our experts ready to chat. That's actually, you're in two places at once
there.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. It's not live.
So do ask questions. This is a great opportunity. If we're not quite explaining what you need to know, you've got a particular thing that's just bubbled up into your mind, do connect with us and ask your questions. We'll try our very best to get those answered. And we have got prizes, spot prizes during the day. I met with this guy, Simon Singh, shameless plug here. He's got his book, The Simpsons and Their Mathematical Secrets. And that's an interesting thing you didn't realise, but actually, The Simpsons was written by a bunch of maths grads from places like Berkeley and MIT who decided to go a completely different way with their careers. And so they kind of put loads of Easter eggs inside The Simpsons show. And this goes through some of those concepts. And we've got other prizes as well. So we're going to ask a question during each session. First finger on Twitter. You can go and win some stuff. And we'll send that out to you. So without further ado, what I really want to do is stop talking, actually. I know that may seem strange. So I've got a very interesting chat. Matthew Smith from Microsoft Research, who's just joined the dark side and is now out talking to customers a lot more about what you know.
The light side. It's all relative.
So, Matthew, tell us a little bit about your journey and what you're going to be talking to us about today.
Thanks, Andrew. Well, I'm really passionate about turning data into decisions, turning them into insights, and it's a great pleasure to be able to talk about that and reflect on that now. In fact, that transition you mentioned, going from Microsoft Research, where I was turning data into scientific insights, now into Corp, reflects my enthusiasm and a sense of this opportunity that we have to impact organizations around the world by helping them make better decisions and make better decisions faster, by suddenly being empowered to turn the data that they can acquire or they already have into valuable new insights for their business. So that's what I wanted to reflect on in this talk. And throughout the course of today, we're going to have MVPs talking about specific aspects of turning data into intelligence. And so I thought I'd stick to the almost the textbook definition of keynote and try and set the tone for those. I'll cover things more broadly and in less depth.
Yeah.
And beyond the tech, really thinking about what it means to turn data into decisions.
Right, so let's crack on then.
So I'll cover a range of different things. But
the word foci, I mean, we don't get that in a sort of normal Channel 9 presentation, do we?
Yeah, you say, it did say focuses, but then someone said to me that's grammatically incorrect. Yeah. And so there's two key areas, I think it's worthwhile, and this is a recommendation for businesses wanting to transform themselves using data, is to put the tech to one side and think about, well, how are we going to transform? What are the decisions we are wanting to have influenced by analyzing data. So I wanted to talk, first of all, about the process of turning data into decisions, which of course is a process that humans have done before we even had computers.
Yeah, I suppose if you consider the human mind as a computer, we're kind of doing that all the time ourselves.
That's right. That's what life has done. You know, you could say that natural selection has operated on those that made the better decisions in light of the decisions.
Yeah.
And so let's look at that process, and we've got some new terminology for the different stages in that process.
Right. Okay.
And so there should be a question going out on Twitter about what those different stages are. And then the second part, I'll talk about what excites me about what we're making available through the Microsoft platform to enable that. And the thing that I most admire Microsoft for in its history is democratizing capability.
Mm.
And we've done that throughout the history of the organization, whether it was enabling people to use a computer, tell a computer what to do without having to program it, say, or write a letter, or do your accounts, or you'd organize your electronic communications, and then now get insights from data. And that's what drove me to join Core, because there's just going to be this huge transformation in business as a result of companies being enabled to make smarter decisions faster using our platform.
So let's dig in and have a look at this then.
So I don't want to ever give across the impression. We need to ground it in the fact that, of course, we have been turning data into decisions since the beginning of time. As we said, since life even evolved. Our ability to do that is, what's new is using computational support for those analytics.
Yeah.
And so now we're starting to see these phrases associated with different stages of the analytics process. So I thought it useful to say what they are to help viewers recognize those terms and recognize what stages of the analytics process they are.
Yeah, so we've been over here a lot, haven't we?
The descriptive analytics side.
I spent 10 years doing that, you know, producing graphs and charts showing what had happened, I guess.
That's right. And still people need help nowadays in doing that side, and that shouldn't be undervalued. And then there's what do those observations relate to? So that's diagnostic analytics. And then predictive analytics is the easiest story behind predictive analytics is when you do identify, say, cause and effect, or one thing relates to another thing, then can you use it to predict if something changes, what will also change? And then prescriptive analytics is actually making recommendations or making decisions on the basis of analytics. And as I say, experts have been doing that in their head all the time. So the examples I put there, I thought I'd set it in a medical context.
Yeah.
We're used to medical experts using all those stages of the analytics process. So descriptive analytics, the stethoscope is our device for doing descriptive analytics, and we get an indication of the heart rate. And then, of course, the GP then does the diagnostic analytics, the predictive analytics, the prescriptive analytics in their heads and makes a decision. Diagnostic analytics then, for a general practitioner, they're looking at what a set of indicator variables, things that are measured, might indicate about you.
Mm.
And the one I took off Wikipedia here is a set of conditions relating to meningitis, of course, spotting whether you've got conditions of meningitis.
And it's super difficult. If we saw one of those, we probably, you know, in IT, I think we suffer a lot from headaches, a lot of my colleagues do, but it's the cocktail of those, the mix of those particular symptoms
right.
that's going to describe it. It's going to stand out to somebody. So not
that's
any
right.
one thing. And I think we're in business, we're in the same kind of problem there as well.
And in the past, we would manage that with lots of people and lots of time, compiling all this information and identifying key predictors. But now we have computational support for that to identify those insights faster. And that's really fantastic, really enabling. Predictive analytics is then turning that into actually making a prediction. So the one I like here is the height chart that you get in the UK. If you have a child, you get this from the NHS, and it gives you a typical distribution of height. And then based on, say, your child, how they've developed over time and their current age, already the the GP, or even you can see for yourself from the chart whether your child is likely to turn into someone that's on average for height, or below average or above average. And indeed, depending on how it's heading, it might also indicate, for example, if someone's growing larger than normal, taller than normal, for example, it might indicate other things as well.
Yes. Okay.
And then the prescriptive, which is just enabling decisions. And the one we see most often is then, you know, on the TV when a heart monitor flatlines in a medical drama, the machine sounds an alarm. We've built that prescriptive analytics into the machine,
so it knows to signal. On the signal. Device you're wearing as well.
That's right.
If it doesn't like your heart rate, it will do stuff.
It will let me know. That's right. Yeah. And now we have computation to make it easier to build those capabilities. So in Microsoft, we represent that capability with this analytics pipeline. So we want to go from data into making actions. And what's new and what's developing at an incredible pace in the Microsoft platform is the computational support to help in each of those stages. So the arrow connected to data in that diagram, the descriptive analysis, the diagnostic analysis, predictive prescriptive, represents computational support for that. And this, the length of the arrow is representing the amount of computational effort, or just simply computation required in order to conclude that analytic process. So descriptive analytics is relatively straightforward, what happened. And then if you actually want computers to recommend actions or even make a decision, adjust a sensor or device, say an irrigation system, detect soil moisture and automatically turn up the irrigation rate if it's dry, for example, then that would be an automation of that prescription. And a key important part that mustn't be ignored is that light blue wedge there, where in going from descriptive, diagnostic and predictive into actions, then you need different degrees of human involvement. And actually you can, one of the things I'll say later is you can accelerate the pace with which you get insights from these computational analytics by respecting the fact that there are people out there with domain understanding that can help you jump from the analytics to the decision, and it's important to make the most of that in your organization.
I think we're very clear on the fact that I often get asked about this. Well, this is fully automated, you know, do we need any more doctors if we're doing patient diagnosis? And the answer, of course, is absolutely yes, because even every system is imperfect, but the computation engine is making, if you like, slightly different approaches. It's good at some things and humans are good at others, and if you combine the two, we can reduce the overall error rate and the accuracy of prediction, I think. You know, an algorithm, for example, might only score, you know, you've got meningitis, it might give you a score between 0.4 and 0.6, or 40 to 60%.
Yes, yeah.
Well, it's not really sure, it's guessing.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's where a senior registrar or somebody with years of experience might spot something, a red something somewhere that the computer doesn't know.
That's right. When it's done best, it's empowering. It's enabling people to do a lot more. And actually, that's one of the reasons for the advances in these computational capabilities, because of the advent of big data, which is a real thing. You know, it's not hype.
Yeah.
My definition of big data is that you absolutely need computational support in order to do your analytics. Even an expert couldn't look at some big volume data, for example, some genetic sequence data or something like that, and say what it's telling you. You need computation to help there. And so having computational techniques to help in handling big data is of course, all incredibly empowering for experts as well.
Yeah. I think the other thing also as well for me is that the algorithm, if you come up with the killer algorithm for, say, meningitis, it needs big data in order to train against.
That's right.
So often you need lots of cases, you know, learned examples. Well, this unfortunate child had the condition, this guy didn't, and we need those patterns, and we need more information about them. So from the wearable device they've got, from maybe deeper diagnosis, some imaging and what have you. So that for me means that the algorithms get smarter with big data. So it's a virtuous cycle, I think.
Absolutely right. Yeah, and so that, you know, organisations see their ability to acquire data, use data is increased now, and so how can they combine that with their domain understanding?
Yeah, and I like the one on the right. I haven't seen big veracity before. We talk about four V's, and sometimes people put another V in there, but I've not seen that one before. Could you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So with veracity, it's about the level of signal to noise in the data. So high veracity data, I can't remember which way around it is. I think high veracity means high noise. Mm. It might be the inverse of that, but you get the idea. And so if you take, for example, targeted advertising, and in the diagram there, we've got lots of social media threads, then we know that there are indicators in that that might reflect people's propensity to respond to an advert or to buy something. But of course, we don't pretend to understand everyone's thought processes in order to predict whether they're going to buy something that you flash in front of them. But then when you've got lots of that data and you're rolling out a targeted advertising campaign, even having a small percentage point improvement in your ability to identify someone who's likely to buy can yield a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so having the ability to identify signals in the noise, even if those signals are incredibly weak, can generate a lot of value. And of course, you need computational support in order to handle all those different
things. And we need these big data centers to be able to cope with all this.
That's
stuff.
Right, that's right. Yeah, so for each of those, we need computational support in order to handle data. These, I would say these four V's are the four dimensions of big data.
Yeah.
And in putting this together, I recognize there's this other one, which Microsoft is doing really well. So I'd like to put out there this fifth V, which might not stand the test of time, but for me, there seems to be also this concept of versatility.
Yes.
Which is making it easy to acquire information regardless of the source, do analytics on it regardless of your preference, do it in Visual Studio, do it in Azure Machine Learning, do it in something else, and then deploy the insights, deploy the algorithms, deploy the capability through all sorts of different channels. And it's that flexibility that Microsoft's building up and is doing incredibly well.
Yeah, so I've got my penguin here.
Oh, yeah.
My penguin here. I mean, he embodies this now. We're in a world where we're using open source languages to do some of this work. We might be running our computation on a Linux platform. It doesn't really matter, ultimately, because what we're interested in helping the customers to do is to arrive at the answer. And I think that's absolutely essential to all of this. So I like your versatility.
That's right. Interoperability, etc. People want to have a lot of choice. Mm. And where people now are looking for help is the guidance. Well, what's the best way to bring these things together? Yeah. How do I bring these things
and
together?
This embodies your new role.
That's right. Understanding how to connect the transformations that people want to achieve with how we achieve that.
Right.
That's right. So in relation to that then, and in having gone through this process over a number of years and a number of different problem areas in different industries, before from a research perspective, now from a services perspective, these particular tips drop out that I would always make and I would always evaluate when speaking to people or government or or companies, organizations in general about how they can benefit by analyzing data to make better decisions. And they're fairly obvious, but it's important to underline, especially as it might not be obvious to everyone. So the first one is to know your analytics position. And that means to know what types of analytics you're doing already. So are you mostly descriptive? Are you trying to achieve prescriptive, but you've never looked at data before? Are you trying to apply something that you've got capability in a different area? But there's also what business problems are you trying to solve and how can you solve them? Another one is, and I'll come back to these in future slides, but is to make sure you're building on that core expertise you have and you're using it to benefit from the new computational capability sooner.
Yeah, so this is really your business domain. You understand environment if you're in an environmental agency.
Exactly.
You understand retail if you're in the loyalty card business and so on and so forth. Because the computer's going to throw out some correlations, for example, and you need to sense check that. And this is back to the human plus computer.
That's right. And it also goes before the analytics process. So if you throw lots of data science and say, come up with something valuable from that, there's a lot of things to explore. Whereas if you say, look, these are likely to be the key things that are determining the thing we care about, it might be whether or not someone clicks on an advert, for example, in targeted advertising. So first of all, flash to me the relationship between that and, for example, what their likes are on Facebook, that sort of thing. And then the last one is crucially important, that accounting for the fact that your analytics will not always remain as accurate as they did when you first built them.
Yeah, yeah, and the story I love to talk about here is that the Nest appears on the home automation system from Google appears on Amazon on its first day, and this chap goes on and buys it. I go on and buy it, and then I realise it's my nephew's 10th birthday tomorrow, and I decide to go and buy him a toy, and I see this inflatable Tyrannosaurus Rex, and he's a nut for dinosaurs. So I check all of that out. And then you, as the next customer to come along and buy the Nest, you're going to go and order that thing, and it's going to make a basket recommendation. And of course, there's that Tyrannosaurus Rex. Good algorithm, not quite the right data in it at the moment, so we need to retrain the
That's absolutely right. And so that in every area of industry, if you're looking to continue to use data to generate new insights, etc., you need to build in this feedback cycle to monitor how it's doing and whether it's getting worse or better over time and whether you can improve it. So I just want to reflect on that. So I see knowing your analytics position from three perspectives, and it's important to respect all those perspectives. So one is fairly obvious. What's the business objectives you're trying to achieve? And ideally expressed in quantitative terms even. We're wanting to improve reduce the amount we waste in our supply chain when we're providing products to, say, supermarkets or something like that. How much would a reduction in the uncertainty about how much demand is there's going to be mean for the amount of product we need to produce and potentially overproduce, for example, something like that. So the key thing is to have these business objectives and an understanding of how the data you get, the data you get and the insights you get from the data analyses impact those business objectives. Seems obvious, but if you can draw that sharp relationship, you've got something to go on. But it's easy to get excited about that potential and not rationalize it from an IT perspective in terms of that's the bottom question, what's the technical capability to deliver this? You might have these grand goals, but not have the computational infrastructure, for example, or the investment you need in order to build up that technical capability offsets the financial benefit.
But the one that worries me slightly on this as well is we've talked about this, humans plus computers. It's the humans who've got the skills and capability to deliver those insights. Even if we've got the big data center we spent a gazillion on hardware, we've kind of worked out the plan. I still need a Matt Smith maybe to go and help me make that real.
Yeah, and that's where the other dimension you need to look at it is from the data science perspective. Yeah. So how easy is it to solve this problem? Mm. If you do have a data scientist, then do they have experience in addressing this kind of predictive analytics problem? If you don't, maybe the problem's really amenable to analytics and actually you could figure it out yourself. So we've got in the Cortana Analytics Gallery, for example, predictive maintenance templates that show you how you take data on failure rates and things like that and turn it into an algorithm that would predict the remaining useful life.
And you can see the outcome of that. And if it isn't quite doing it, then you might get someone in to tune it. If it's looking like it's sort of working, but not quite.
Okay, and predictive maintenance is one where I think we'll see a lot of advances.
I've seen some good stuff. I think we'll be hearing about what Rolls-Royce have been up to later on today as well.
That's fantastic. Yeah. But then if you're in the other situation, you're trying to predict something that there's no evidence it's predictable, like we talked about weather earlier this morning. How predictable is weather's really difficult to predict. And if you're trying to predict a system that's as chaotic as the weather, you're likely to need a lot of resource in order to enable that.
And we know that the Met Office and other European agencies are spending fortunes on this, and they've got Crays and all the rest of it. And still, we're not sure if we're going to need our umbrellas at Wimbledon this year, or Cliff Richard for that matter.
That's right. And so,
The cows.
If you look at any successful example, application of analytics, then you can see that these questions are addressed, have been addressed. So with the connected cow, it's just the farmers are spending a lot of time just physically monitoring cows before, and you could see that by having an electronic capability to monitor cow behavior, you can detect its behavior changes that are associated with it being in estrus, being ready to mate. And I recommend anyone, if you're looking at a successful case study of getting insights from data, then it's look at how those questions were answered. In that case, they had a clear benefit between from being able to predict more accurately when the cow's receptive, and all the other questions were addressed as well. So I'd encourage people to, you know, when they're addressing whether how can we benefit from data insights, then try and address those questions in that context. Building on your core expertise, well, we already talked about that, but in each of these stages of the analytics process, then domain experts can really accelerate you from descriptive, what should we be measuring, what's relevant, what would be key predictors from the predictive side. So if you're trying to build a predictive model, a data scientist might not know what to use to predict, but a domain expert would go, well, this and this and this are key things. Yeah. You show me how to turn that into an algorithm.
Right.
So, and then accounting for change and uncertainty, we already talked about that as well. So I'll skip on from that.
So obviously, I kind of know, I know we've got a load of stuff to help with this, but I don't think our audience does. So hopefully by the end of the day, they'll kind of get a sense of where we all this stuff. But we've made huge investments in this space. And the Connected Cows is one of the early studies of actually how that all becomes real. And we've got videos coming up in the ad breaks as well, which will show you some of the stuff that you've been working on as well. Which,
yeah, and that's the thing that really made me want to make this move to court, because it's sitting there to be used. Mm-hmm. And every time I try to take a case study I knew could be addressed with analytics before with older tools, I found it was just so much easier to implement within the products we're now developing and scale up and out.
Yes.
And so that's the great thing about these developments in our analytics stack. And Cortana Intelligence Suite represents one set of those. So it's a whole set of tools to help us do different stages of the analytics pipeline and scale it up and out. So it enables data insights, whatever your position, that's whether you're doing descriptive analytics through to prescriptive analytics, and can be scaled as well. And deployed on whatever device, et cetera, as well. So it's really democratizing. So that's the thing that really excites me, is that this is now available to many more people. And the level of investment we're putting into making it accessible is really exciting to see. So if you go right to the basics, descriptive analytics, you know, we've had helped people for decades in doing descriptive analytics in Excel, but for example, Power BI, that's helping us convey descriptive analytics on all sorts of different devices, on the web, on your computer, on your mobile phone. And then now just this recent development, and this just signifies the direction of change. Yeah. Now you can build your own custom visualizations using R within Power BI. So having that customizability as well.
You just drag the R icon onto your design surface, drag the fields onto it, and then if you've got your ggplot, you're there, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I can see communities building up, showing off their visualizations, and now not just it being available to someone who can read and implement the code, but they can actually use it in an Excel visualization or on a mobile phone piece of software, for example. One of the key things that I'm excited about, and we're putting investment into that, is the diagnostic analytics. And one of the things I learned from research is when you're trying to validate that you've made an interesting insight. The case, an example online is predicting breast cancer. Yep. You know, you want to know, if I've got a new insight into what relates to breast cancer, well, how much is it an artifact of how I've analyzed the data and this sort of thing? So this image is from Jupyter Notebooks that are now associated with Azure Machine Learning.
Yep.
And you can take people through your logical process, including how you coded that up in order to get your insight.
Yeah, and obviously essentially medical research, also important in banking governance, is to be able to show you're working. So that's
exactly.
Like doing your maths GCSE, isn't it? This is great. And you get the plots in there and everything else, and there it is, and here's the data I use, and here's the outcome, which is, after all, what science is all about.
Exactly. And re-implement your working. So that's the new thing, is that they might go, well, that you haven't done it quite right, you should have used squared there or something.
Yeah.
And then in the end, it doesn't affect the result, but it's more correct.
But science is we.
Exactly, that's right.
And art is I think.
One of the more visible developments, because everyone's raving about it, quite rightly so, is enabling predictive analytics through our platform.
Yeah. I'm gonna be cheeky and suggest that these are all now, I think, called Cortana Intelligence,
these
APIs. Obviously, we don't always completely run through all of our slide decks, but these are samples. So these are great ways to just jump in and have a go. Either you can just consume an API, and for developers on the call, that's really, really easy to do. Or you can kind of grow your own using one of the templates that we've got there.
Yeah, and for organizations wondering how they can benefit from data insights in our platform, say from predictive analytics, just looking and seeing where successful applications have been done before is incredibly is a good sign if it is actually there. And that's just an example of the drag and drop interface to build your own predictive analytics, for example. So you don't have to write lines of code necessarily. And I'll skip on through prescriptive analytics, but if you want to get to the advanced state of Cortana recommending decisions you should make or things you should buy, we have tools in the platform
so to help actually, build that capability. So we can actually get rid of the keyboard and the mouse now. We can just shout at our computers and say, what's it going to do? What's the weather going to be tomorrow?
Right.
Will Rangers win tonight?
Yeah. Now, it's not easy right now. I've never seen it be completely easy to enable that capability.
Yeah.
You need developers, you need data scientists potentially to pull that together, but you can now do it with our
tools. But yeah, if we're going to design a good application, we've got the UX designer, we've got the hardcore developer. What we're now saying is we want an intelligent application. Just another guy on the team is the data scientist who's going to weave, give you that insight that you can then bake into your application.
You require less people, you can do it faster and for a lot less upfront expense. And the scalability aspect is really empowering as well. So you get your insight, now I want to roll out to my customers or roll out to everyone in my organization, or I now want to take in streaming data rather than historical data. And we've got these components in the platform, you know, from stream analytics to help you run analytics on the streaming data, to then Hadoop and Spark to help you process big data, for example.
Yeah, we were talking about the fact that we made these investments in R, and what that means now is I can just splash R over my Hadoop cluster, and I can have all these little nodes working together, and then bring the answer back in again. So rather than R just sitting in memory as it traditionally does now, we're able to use disk, we're able to orchestrate across big volumes of data, and I think that's one dimension to this. And then scale for me as well is when we did that how old.
Yes,
it never does it well for me, I have to say. But at least it gets my gender right, so can't grumble. But we had no idea that that was going to take off. We just did it as a demo at Build.
Yeah,
and then suddenly we got millions of people hitting it. And it's still a really, really popular site that people go to just to have a bit of fun with and maybe hold up one of these fun characters, see how old the Channel 9 guy is.
That's right,
And that scale means we can give your idea to everybody.
And that shows you how it's possible now to relatively straightforwardly do even the prescriptive analytics.
Yeah.
You can investigate how that was put together and how that was scaled up using our different bits and pieces in the platform. And the other aspect to it is the democratization side of things. So I'm tremendously excited the fact that, for example, with Power BI, then you can use it from iOS and Android, etc. We are enabling within Visual Studio, enabling people to work with a whole range of other languages, including open source languages like R, and then do their source control for changes in code bases and things like that with a lot of different source control providers like GitHub, for example.
My important one is this whole kind of OData initiative that's
now
an ISO standard, if I've got this right.
Yeah.
And so that's just a way of consuming and sharing data so that we can feed into these jet engines, and so we can pull from sources. We look like OData to other services, so wherever you happen to be doing your thing, we're not hiding anything away. It's no longer anywhere near as proprietary as it would have been, say 10 years ago. And if we're testing something like Azure SQL Data Warehouse, well, we tested it with Tableau. We'd like you to use Power BI, but it works really well with Tableau, if that's what you want to use.
That's right.
So we'd like you to use that stuff, but we aren't going to force you to, I think.
It needs to be interoperable.
Yes,
that's right, and we benefit by doing that. That's a summary there of the fact that we've talked about the different tech that's at different stages of this analytics process, and just going from left to right now is so much faster, so much more efficient. And so we're enabling these smarter decisions faster by requiring less upfront in order to go from left to right, which is great. So I've put some ticks there.
good. We've
covered those two areas.
You are the sort of more formal teaching guy. This is good, though. This is good. Ticks are good.
And the question I have at the end of this is, we've talked about a lot of exciting capability, but how are we going to help people navigate all of that? And that's a question I ponder a lot now. How can we make it easier for people to know what the best options are in pulling all this together in order to address the problem? They need to be cognizant of their situation, their problem they're trying to address, their data, their resources, and they need to be aware of what's possible in our platform. And the right, you can do one thing using five different options, say, in our platform. So what's the best one for that particular situation?
And I think, obviously, that's why we have a service division. That's why we've got MVPs on the show today. And indeed, that's why we're making this series, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. Fantastic.
Okay, so when you're out there in the wild, are you able to share some of the stuff that you're actually working on right now without mentioning company names and so on?
Yeah, so there's a lot of interest in implementation of predictive maintenance.
Yeah.
And, you know, different organizations are at different stages along the pipeline. So, you know, there's a lot of interest in descriptive analytics in industry, for example, in just seeing different stages of the process. And with an awareness that if they, so first of all, an awareness that their experts in seeing these feeds can go, right, there's something wrong there, better than they did before. And then with the hope that they can be able to manage, for example, their maintenance schedules and things like that a lot more intelligently.
There's a Thrice and Krupp case study with lifts, I think, isn't there?
They're
looking at the vibration, I think, on the actual cars themselves to work out when a component's likely to fail. And to be clear here, we're not talking about the business of a lift falling down a shaft with a load of people in it. That I don't think has ever really happened, except in the movies. What we're talking about is that you've got sort of six people trying to get to the 30th floor of their coffee in the morning and only one lift is working. And that gets really bad. So getting the engineer on the day there with the right parts, knowing what the most likely procedure is going to have to carry out to fix that thing, I think, is what we're looking at that here. And when we're talking about Rolls-Royce, then it's making sure that they know when the aircraft is coming back to Heathrow, what's the things that they should be doing to it, because it's going to be more expensive than to service that aircraft when it's not at their hub airport and so on and so forth.
That is an area I invest in a lot in services, is understanding the connection, how this analytics fits into the larger implementation in the business.
Okay, cool. So you've got a question for the guys, I think?
Yeah, my question for people out there is, what are those stages of the analytics process? Because it's worthwhile having that in mind whenever you're addressing your own problem or in people's problems you're trying to address, is knowing the different types of analytics that we typically recognize now. And so I flashed that up before. And so it's worthwhile testing yourself to make sure that you also know it.
Yeah, they can't rewind the video, so that's probably a fairly good one. Matt, thanks very much for giving up your
Andrew.
Pop
value. Enjoyed that a lot.
Really, really good fun. Right, we're going to take a short break. Grab coffee, grab sugar-related snacks. We'll be back afterwards. And I think we've got Richard Conway up next.
Oh, great.
Yep. Yeah. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.